Blog Talk Radio.
Have all consented to interviews under such terms. this is absolutely disgusting, and it goes against everything that made our media is supposed to stand for. The following is what Joseph...
Yeah, I was just going to go here to the just the show.
Okay.
To the New York Times article and see if we can pull it up here. This is by Peter W. Jeremy Peters was the New York Times writer, and
it says the quotations come back redacted, stripped of colorful metaphors, blah blah blah.
Yeah. So they made this quote, but it is a double-edged sword for journalists who are getting the on-the-record quotes they have long asked for, but losing much of the spontaneity and authenticity in their interviews. Jim Messina, the Obama campaign manager, can be foul-mouthed, but readers would not know it because he deletes the curse words before approving his quote.
Uh-huh.
And brevity is not a strong suit for David Plouffe, senior White House advisor, so he tightens up his sentences before giving them the okay. And Stuart Stevens, the senior Romney strategist, is fond of disparaging political opponents by quoting authors like Walt Whitman and referring to historical figures like H.R. Haldeman, Richard Nixon's chief of staff. But such clever lines later rarely make it past Mr. Stevens. And many journalists spoke about the editing only if granted anonymity, an irony that did not escape them. And no one said the editing altered the meaning of a quote. The changes were almost always small and seemingly unnecessary, they said. And those who did speak on record said the restrictions seem only to be growing. It's not something I'm particularly proud of because there's a part of me that says, don't do it. Don't agree to their terms, said Major Garrett, a correspondent of the National Journal. There are times when this feels like I'm dealing with some of my editors. It's like, you just changed this because you could. It was difficult to find a news outlet that had but had not agreed to a quote approval. We don't like practice. The practice, said Dean Beckwith, managing editor of news at the New York Times. We encourage our reporters to push back. Unfortunately, this practice is becoming increasingly common. Maybe we have to push back harder.
The Obama campaign declined to make Mr. Plouffe or Mr. Messina available to explain their media practice. We are not putting anyone on the record for this story, said Katie Hogan, an Obama spokesperson, without a hint of irony. She pointed to the many unrestricted interviews with campaign officials every day on television when the press corps travels with the president. Jay Carney, the White House press secretary, said the White House has made a concerted effort to make more officials available to the news media. We have a lot more people talking a lot more often now, he said.
And there's
the article goes on
a few more paragraphs, but you can get this, you can read this whole article in the New York Times.
Politics.
Yeah, on July 15th, 2012. So you can go to that. And I recommend that you do.
Wonder the campaign is so boring.
Oh, yeah. And what's going on. Now, the next quote, the next thing I got here, it really knocked me out. And I got to hand it before it's news.com again. They came up with some really good stuff. So, but if you think Obama is interested in jobs and the economy, after reading this, after hearing this, you will understand why the economy is going under. And because he doesn't give a shit. Okay.
Yeah.
He really doesn't. Wait till you see this.
That's kind of scary.
Yeah. He hasn't had an economic meeting since April of last year.
No, Obama hasn't received his daily economic briefing.
Right.
You said meeting.
Well, I'm sorry.
Briefing.
Something is missing. If you look at Obama's calendar for the 26th of April 2011, you will see on his schedule at 10 a.m., the president receives an economic daily briefing. After that, nothing. According to the daily schedule released by the White House, Barack Obama hasn't received his daily economic briefing for 15 months. Yeah. And again, they show this. They show it here. They show his schedule. But it says, Carney was asked, Jay Carney, who's the press secretary, was asked about it last June. And he says, the question was, just a quick follow-up, I feel like I missed this whole I missed this over the course of the last few months. I might have been on vacation or something, but when did the president stop doing the daily presidential economic briefings? Mr. Carney, I think it happens periodically. A question, but it used to be a daily thing with a presidential daily briefing. I'm just curious when it stopped being daily. Mr. Carney says, I have to go check again. It sort of happens occasionally. It doesn't happen all the time, and I think that's was always the case. But I can check. I don't have any scheduling changes to announce, but, you know. And he says, but perhaps that's why he hasn't met with his job council in months. The president hasn't done his homework. The excuse his press secretary gives is the president has a lot on his plate. And I'm just going to play this.
Let's see what he has to say.
Yeah, about a minute and a half.
I'm sorry, did you have a second question?
Yes,
on the job council, obviously, we reported that they haven't met formally or publicly for 6 months. Why exactly is that?
Look, the president solicits and receives input and advice from members of his jobs council and others about economic initiatives all the time, and I would point you to the numerous initiatives put forward by the Jobs Council that this administration, under the president's direction, has taken action on, including a presidential memorandum in August of last year that selected 14 job-creating high-priority infrastructure projects for expedited review. Four of those are already under construction. In March of this year, just a few months ago, an executive order launched an interagency effort to cut red tape and improve outcomes for infrastructure projects. New federal plan that will require timelines concurrent instead of sequential reviews, early coordination among federal, state, and local agencies to reduce duplication, and adoption of other best practices. There are numerous initiatives that have been proposed by the Jobs Council that this administration has acted on, and that will continue to be the case.
So there's no reason they haven't met publicly?
No, there's no specific reason, except the president's obviously got a lot on his plate, but he continues to solicit and receive advice from numerous folks outside the administration about the economy, about ideas that he can act on with Congress or administratively to help the economy grow and help it create jobs. Laura. Oh, Wendell, sorry. Then Laura.
So, it says, I've never been president.
This is Jay Carney,
though? Yeah, Jay Carney is correct. Now, this is a discussion. This report says, Obama does have a lot on his plate, especially jobs and the economy, which some economists say is slipping into another recession. At best, we can say the economy is slowing down. I've never been president, although I once played one on stage. As an experienced observer, it just seems the economy should be a big thing on his plate.
Number one
issue to voters. If that's the case, the man should be meeting with his jobs council and getting his daily economic briefings. On the other hand, I don't want to give the impression that Barack Obama has done nothing. He's been very busy. Here is a list of some of his accomplishments. PolitiFact. The RNC said that over the last 6 months, Obama has golfed 10 times and held 106 fundraisers, even as his job council didn't meet, and even as his job council did not meet once. The RNC's tally is on target. We rate this statement true, PolitiFact. Did Barack Obama hold 100-plus fundraisers? Did Barack Obama hold 100-plus fundraisers while his job council never met? PolitiFact says yes. Obama has attended 185 fundraisers since announcing his bid for re-election. But here is the real cool thing. From Tinseltown to Broadway, Obama has surrounded himself with blockbuster names lately: George Clooney, Julia Roberts, Reese Witherspoon, Spike Lee, Will Smith, Oprah Winfrey, Ellen DeGeneres, Cher, and many others who make more in 1 year than most people do in a lifetime. Obama played basketball with a Batman Clooney and a Spider-Man Tobey Maguire in all one game. And he held a private chat in Los Angeles with some of the town's young stars last week, from Jessica Alba to Jeremy Renner, and so on and so forth. And they keep going on with all these celebrities. And he says, see, what you want about Barack Obama, but name one other president who has played basketball with Batman and Spider-Man in the same game. So what if the economy is going to hell in a handbasket? Who cares that this president isn't meeting with his job advisor or getting his daily economic brief? This guy plays basketball with the stars. What else could you want from a president? Right? And you can check his article out. It's pretty good. Before it's news, right?
Kind of pathetic, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Just an aside. One of my favorite groups, probably one of the greatest duets that I've ever heard, the Aztec Two Step, is going to be playing at the Cafe Mina in. I think that's in. They're such a great group. They're all time great. Saratoga Springs, New York. If anybody wants to check that out, you can. Aztec Two Step. For those of you who might know, they are just announcing their event at Saratoga Springs. Check that out. Cafe Mina. Go to that on there. Directions. August 4th. Hang on. I'm trying to get back to my site here. Alright. Okay. Here's something that was rather disturbing. And,
the Weabi Project?
Yeah, a friend of mine.
Not only do these gorgeous flowers remove benzene from the air, They're known to improve sleep by absorbing carbon dioxide and giving off more oxygen overnight.
She put those in the bedroom,
I guess. Oh, those are beautiful plants, Gerba daisies. I love all of those plants.
Yeah, and I'd like to thank Sandra Lavender. She's an Australian friend, Facebook friend of mine, who sent that over. And I thought that was a great...
So it's important to purify the air in your home. Get some plants.
Yeah.
They're wonderful, and they're great friends.
Yes, yes. Lila has many, many, many of them.
Oh, I love my plants.
Somebody sent this over to me. I forget who it was, but it's a picture of a girl holding a match, and she has a T-shirt that says, "If guns cause crime, matches cause arson. Prevent forest fires. Register matches."
There's a point there.
I think so. And this is a quickie, too.
GMO toxins found in 93% of unborn babies. 50 countries now label Monsanto's GMOs.
California vote yes on 37.
Yes, for our children, health, and freedom. It must be a...
Labeling GMOs. I wish we had that resolution here.
I do, too.
This is interesting. This one here is, again, brace yourself. Anyone going to the London Olympics, except for a competing athlete, is out of their mind, right? Because what they're doing is they're saying this is the Times of Israel is actually threatening to attack Iran during the Olympics, all right? And, they want the Olympians to...
Olympic committee
to make sure that Israeli and Iranian athletes are kept separated, for in case to avoid fights
or
reprisals or fights. It says here, Olympic Planning Committee fears a military showdown during the largest sporting event in the world. Imagine that. This is from the Times of Israel. Taking into account the possibility of an Israeli attack on Iran during the 2012 Summer Games, the Olympic Committee in charge of London events has formed a special team to prepare for the contingency. According to the Hebrew daily Yedioth Ahronoth, on Wednesday, the team, consisting of politicians, diplomats, security officials, and organizing committee personnel, wrote in a report that such a strike was entirely possible. Yedioth reported that the team was also preparing for the possibility of an earthquake or volcanic eruption. They're expecting everything there.
England is thought to be within the range of Iranian missiles, and UK officials believe that a military confrontation between Jerusalem and Tehran could involve the country against its will. The special team listed a number of steps that would need to be taken in the event of such a conflict. Among them, opening a special command center, providing secret safe houses for foreign leaders wishing to meet for diplomatic purposes, and preparing for emergency evacuations of dignitaries. The team said England would have to guarantee the safety of the athletes and the continuation of the games. Oh, God, you couldn't stop the game.
No.
As well as make sure Israeli and Iranian athletes could come away from each other. Yedioth reported that the recommendations were passed on to the police, who practiced dealing with the mass protests that could erupt if war broke out. Oh, lovely.
Isn't that lovely?
Welcome to the Olympics.
Anybody
right?
Going to those Olympics got to be out of their mind.
I don't even want to watch them on television. I've totally lost interest. I used to love watching them.
Yeah, but man, just to know that they're that this is what's going on down here is unbelievable. You know, everybody got excited, and I understandably about the the Batman shooting and stuff.
I
understand that. But, you know, just the other day, nobody heard about this, but it was reported by Iranian press that U.S. assassination drones killed 12 in northwestern Pakistan. All right? Now,
that's terrible.
You My question is, you know, why haven't we heard of this? You know, U.S. assassination.
Well, the filtered news.
Oh, of course. In the attack which occurred on Monday, U.S. drones fired several missiles at a private compound in Shalal area in Waziristan tribal region, where Reuters reported that the target compound is in Dre Village, about 65 kilometers. Now, you got to remember, we just read an article that says Reuters censors the news.
Uh-huh.
So this was obviously allowed. So the U.S. is very, very proud of this, obviously.
Local residents...
Hellfire missile...
wait a minute. Local residents said the airstrike sparked a huge fire in the building. Most of the bodies have been recovered from the rubble. Some local media reports that five drones were still hovering over the area, creating panic among the people in the tribal region and hampering the rescue work. Despite Pakistan's government repeated calls on Washington to end the drone attacks, the U.S. government continues to strike on the tribal regions of the country. Washington claims its drone strikes target militants, although casualty figures clearly indicate that Pakistani civilians are the main victims of the non-UN-sanctioned attacks. Some 200 people have died in drone attacks in Pakistan's northwest tribal region since the beginning of this year.
And the killing of Pakistani civilians, including women and children, in the U.S. drone strikes has strained relations between Islamabad and Washington, prompting Pakistani officials to send warnings to the U.S. administration over the assaults. On January 31st, U.S. President Barack Obama confirmed that the United States uses the unmanned drone of Pakistan and other countries. In reply to questions about the use of the assassination drones by his administration in a chat with web users on Google and YouTube, the U.S. president said, "A lot of these strikes have been in the Fatah, Pakistan federal administered tribal areas. The aerial attacks were initiated by former U.S. President George W. Bush, but have been escalated under Obama." Right. So, you know, Obama has a problem with you know, Mr. Holmes, of course, and killing innocent Americans, but he has absolutely no problem with striking 12 dead with drones or hundreds or thousands of people, you know, all around the world.
And the problem is that these are innocent civilians that are being killed.
Yeah.
To get one militant?
Maybe to get one militant.
That's so wrong.
Yeah, that's so too. But anyway,
why don't we play have a little music break?
Yeah, let me just
after
read
this article.
Let me just read this little quickie here. H.R. 347 says, if anyone, this is a bill in the House, if anyone causes a disruption, a.k.a. protest, at the government building or near someone protected by the Secret Service, they can be jailed for up to 10 years in federal prison. That is the average time served for murder. Manslaughter is usually 1 year. So Congress thinks exercising your right to free speech is more dangerous than murder. So much for freedom. That was by Fond du Lac, underclass photo. This is Facebook. And I just want to read one more thing. Then we'll take a quick break. Batman Massacre was a stage psyops. Shooter kicks in steel-reinforced exit door of movie theater. Impossible. Doors only open inwards. Shooter dressed as Bane, the movie's villain, dressed head to toe in body armor and wearing a gas mask, tosses in a few grenades of tear gas. Civilians cannot buy canisters of tear gas.
Well, it wasn't tear gas.
Or even gas, yes.
They think it was from the kind of gas that they use at those, you know, when the guys play paintball and they go to those shooting places.
All right, let's go.
That's what they think of.
71 people are hit. Even assuming 100% accuracy, one man would have to change weapons and or switch magazines several times to achieve this. It's possible. All right. Although supposedly he had a gun that had a 100 rounds. All right.
Oh, and in a jam or something?
Yeah, in a jam. Incident happened in Aurora, Colorado, a suburb of Denver. which has the strictest gun control laws in the entire state. The movie theater was apparently a gun-free zone. Incident happens just as government is trying to pass UN gun ban. So it's kind of like, yeah. And we just want more for the fun of it.
Mass murderers agree. Gun control works.
Hitler, Stalin, Mao Zedong, and, of course, Obama.
Obama, that's what it looks like.
And it says, I just want Sarah Brady brought up the issue of gun control to Obama, and he responded, I just want you to know that we are working on it. We have to go through a few processes, but under the radar. And no one ever thinks it can happen to them. And mass gun control laws are the prerequisite for mass genocide. This is a historical fact. Government is the number one cause of unnatural death. 262 million people have been killed by government.
Wow. Well, as we know, lots of people support government genocide. They think that's okay.
Oh, yeah. Even the libs, okay, the liberals.
Well, that's who we heard it from.
Yeah, that's who we heard it from. Unbelievable. I can't get into it. I don't know if I read this, but this one, a friend of mine got really upset about this, but I don't care. The James Holmes kills a picture of James Holmes kills 12 in a movie theater with an assault rifle. Everyone freaks out. Then they got a picture of Obama laughing, and he says, kills thousands with his foreign policy and wins a Nobel Prize.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Not that we're saying that James Holmes is a great guy or that he did the right thing or that lessens what he did. But, you know, come on, there's a lot of government-sponsored killing and nobody blinks an eye over it.
Absolutely.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
Let's
so
take our music
break.
We're going to
take
a
quick music break. And,
oh, yeah.
but then I've got a little audio piece for you about the reasons for the extreme weather.
Oh, that should be interesting.
Yeah, and I thought we would play that.
And where is this piece from?
Which piece?
The one that you're
going
to read.
Oh, Salon.com.
Oh, Salon.com. And this was
Salon.
Tuesday, July 17th, 2012. HSBC's criminal clients. Money laundering for drug dealers, terrorists, and gangsters is the latest evidence of financial sector corruption. And this is by Andrew Leonard. And you thought bankers fixing interest rates and playing games with mortgage-backed securities was bad? How about money laundering for Mexican drug dealers, the Russian mafia, and Mideast terrorists? Okay, if we're talking about the potential economic impact on the average person, the interest rate and mortgage shenanigans are really bad, probably more so than the money laundering apparently broken on a massive scale by the large international bank HSBC. But even so, the news report from the Senate's Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations detailing HSBC's multiple failings over the past years is quite the doozy. It reads like a treatment for a villain in James Bond film that never got green-lighted because it was too unrealistic. We could accept getting in bed with the Russians, but the drug dealers and the terrorists as well? That's overkill. Jeez. More to this.
I would say, the first takeaway from HSBC's story is of a rogue bank that didn't care where the money was coming from as long as it kept pouring in. To take just one hilarious example, for several years, HSBC's U.S. money processing centers were clearing vast amounts of extraordinary dubious traveler's checks for a Japanese bank. On a typical day, HSBC would process $500,000 worth of sequentially numbered traveler's checks that were signed and countersigned by the same illegible person. When a curious low-level HSBC flunky tried to learn more about where the money was coming from, all he could find out from the Japanese bank was that the checks were being purchased by around 30 or so used car salesmen. The used car salesmen turned out to have Russian surnames, which isn't the kind of thing that should wave a big honking red flag to any bank official. Well, Russian nationals were buying hundreds of thousands of dollars of American dollar denominated traveler checks from a Japanese bank every single day. And if you're looking to convert ill-gotten rubles into clean American dollars, that's how you go about it.
The second takeaway from this drama is how HSBC's behavior underlines, emphasizes, and highlights what we already know about the banking industry in general. It's corrupt at every level, and the bigger the bank, the less likely it is to be a responsible player. HSBC failings were egregious to the point of absurdity. It's hard to imagine someone like J.P. Morgan's Jamie Dimon allowing his underlings to be so wayward. But in principle, HSBC's actions were no different from the machinations of the Barclay traders who fiddled with LIBOR or the chicanery of Goldman Sachs traders who created mortgage-backed securities designed to fail, sold those securities to their clients, and then bet on their failure. On the self-interested greed of any of the banks funneling millions of dollars to lobbyists in an effort to prevent further regulation. The greed is inexhaustible. Their every action serves to bolster the argument that they should be broken up into tiny pieces and their executive jailed. Once upon a time, you could make an argument with a straight face that it was necessary to keep the banking industry upright in order to avoid larger systemic failure. But the more we know, the more disgusting the whole charade becomes.
Boy, I agree.
Isn't that amazing?
Sick bunch of people.
Yeah. And Barclays is another problem. Let's read this quickly. Congress's new bank outrage. LIBORgate grows worse each day. Meanwhile, U.S. politicians are helping banks hide their ATM fees. Hey, during questioning by British politicians over his role in the ongoing LIBOR scandal, the Bank of England Deputy Governor Paul Tucker admitted Monday that he couldn't be sure that regulators had put an end to private sector manipulation of the key interest rates. "I can't be confident about anything after learning about this cesspit," he replied. Cesspit. That's a strong word for a banking regulator to use about the behavior of Barclays Bank, one of the jewels in Britain's financial system's crown. The closer you listen, the more Tucker sounds like Captain Renault in the movie Casablanca, as he tells Humphrey Bogart, Rick, that he is shocked to find gambling going on here. Bankers giving Bagley. Who knew?
Oh, jeez.
It gets crazier. You can go to salon.com and check out these articles. They're pretty good. And
so what's the audio piece that we have here, Leo?
The audio piece is weather modification and tornado mitigation by electromagnetic satellite beams. Okay, this is
isn't that interesting?
Yeah, I thought it was. It gets a little.
And
it's a little long, and I'm only going to play maybe this YouTube video. America stands ready to.
The HEART program.
But then they go into it. I'm only going to play about 10 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Because it's 36 minutes. But the latter part of it gets really long, kind of technical. But the first.
Let's listen to this introduction part. It's probably very good.
Stun the world with a vast array of powerful new weapons, and other countries are lining up for this new electromagnetic arms race. Because these electromagnetic weapons are so new, they are not controlled by treaties that cover conventional weapons. This could lead to the deployment of electromagnetic weapons in space and unleash forces too powerful to control.
I became interested in the Space Preservation Act and in developing
the
Space Preservation Act when I learned that our administration in Washington was looking at a program called Vision 2020. And Vision 2020 actually is a program for the United States to dominate the world from outer space. The Department of Defense has been working at a facility in Alaska, which is doing research into effects of electromagnetic frequencies in the ionosphere. And that facility, which is called HARP, has raised concern among many individuals about how this research would be applied. For example, we know that according to some of the research, as these energy pulses are directed into the ionosphere, they can have somewhat of an effect.
Some people I know have worried about messing with the ionosphere, and I think that needs a lot of investigation, because at the time we were looking at something that could be used to defend us, 6,000 nuclear warheads looking at you kind of trump just about every other thing you might want to look at. But if they ever wanted to build this antenna as big as I was talking about, then you really need to look at side effects.
What kind of negative effects remains to be seen? Electromagnetic pulses could punch holes through the ionosphere and destroy one of the Earth's protective layers in the same way that pollution depletes the ozone layer.
Before he died in 2007...
Yeah, Dr. Eastland is the guy that was just talking.
Eastland has been working on a method to heat the atmosphere inside a thunderstorm using a space-based microwave beam that claimed to prevent or mitigate the formation of deadly and damaging tornadoes.
He's an associate. I've been presented the concept in 2008 in the American Meteorological of the lecture was National Academy outline, severe storm energy turnover, weather modification concepts, thunderstorm solar power satellite, ARPS microcyclone with tornado. Okay, this is all stuff that they can create with this HARP program. elimination of Hook echo with microwave heating, artificial ionized plasma patterns in atmosphere, cosmic particle ignition of plasma patterns in a an atmospheric heater.
Very small, I can't read.
Yeah, weather research with an atmospheric heater. Gravitational waves generated by HARP. Impact of gravitational waves on weather systems. All right? And, I mean, it's really, 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 really. It shows how you create big storms, thunderstorms, tornadoes.
Tax return estimate, but refused to publicize any more. His refusal is generating critical response from congressional members who claim his secrecy makes him unfit to run for president. However, most members of Congress do not think the same level of transparency should apply to them. While senators and representatives are required to publicize their sources of income, they are not required to disclose their tax returns, which can contain additional financial data like spousal income. McClatchy has asked 530 members of Congress for full disclosure of their tax returns, but only 17 have complied. Among those who refused are Representative Nancy Pelosi and Representative Harry Reid, both of which have heavily criticized Romney for his limited transparency.
He could not even become a cabinet member for that lack of disclosure, and now with the lack of disclosure, he wants to be president of the United States, Nancy Pelosi said. You want to continue?
Go ahead.
Reid said Romney's refusal to publicize more of his financial information makes him unfit to be a dog catcher. God, these guys are so, the hypocrisy of these people, a metaphor for the lowest possible elected official. Pelosi's aides refused to disclose the representative's own tax returns, saying she has already disclosed all that Congress requires. The leader has filed a complete financial disclosure report as required by law that includes financial holdings, transactions, and personal income. Pelosi spoke to and said, and there has been no question about where Leader Pelosi and Democrats stand on tax policy. But similarly, there is no lawful requirement for presidential candidates to publicly release their tax returns, and it remains a matter of choice for the contenders. I didn't know that either. I thought they had to disclose it all. Romney claims that full disclosure of his finances would distract from his issues he finds important. We show all of his loopholes. And in the political environment that exists today, opposition research on the Obama campaign is looking for anything they can use to distract from the failure of the president to reignite our economy, Romney told the National Review. I'm simply not enthusiastic about giving them hundreds of thousands of more pages to pick through, distort, and lie about. So all the Congress doesn't do it. So why the hell should he, right? Why should we? Why should anybody? Good question. Good question. Anyway, let's see if we got anything really interesting to say. Oh, yeah. I thought this was kind of good.
Stephen King's message to Romney.
Yeah, and
Mitt Romney has said, in effect, I'm rich and I don't apologize for it. Nobody wants you to, Mitt. What some of us want is for you to acknowledge that you
couldn't... Mitt Romney has said, in effect, I'm rich and I don't apologize for it.
Yeah.
Nobody wants... Okay, and then...
What some of us want is for you to acknowledge that you couldn't have made it in America without America. Could have made it in America without America. That you were fortunate enough to be born in a country where upward mobility is possible... But where the channels making such upward mobility possibly are being increasingly clogged. I want you to acknowledge that in our America we all should have to pay for our fair share, that our civics classes never taught us that being American means that, sorry, kiddies, you're on your own, that those who have received much must be obligated to pay, not to give, not to cut a check and shut up, in Governor Christie's words, but to pay in the same proportion. That's called stepping up and not whining about it. That's called patriotism, a word the Tea Party loves to throw around as long as it doesn't cost their beloved rich folks any money.
Yeah.
Good for Stephen King.
Yeah.
Slow, time goes on. had to get too many screens open there.
Want to do this? Do you want to read that?
Yeah, I was interested in that article. I read it. It was pretty good. The power of the heart, you think of it. Well, I think it would be good for your Thursday show. Now, here's something. The moon is not what you think it is. I wish there was a little more on it. Is that the article on that? The moon is not what you think it is, and it is not uninhabited. I think this is it right there. I'd like
minutes,
to. Oh. I wanted to get part of that. Here's a former Waterbury native, Michael Chertoff. He's out of his mind. Chertoff suggests pre-crime solution to mass shooting psychos. I think he's a psycho. Secrets in plain sight.
False flag.
Real life theater shootings imitates training exercise at Parker Medical School. That happened at the same time that.
The tragedy that played out in Aurora movie theater.
Or the
Friday
same day.
Was ironically paralleled as a classroom learning experience in a medical school in Parker the same day. Rocky Vista University College, osteopathic medicine, is in the middle of holding specialized classes in disaster life support for 150 second year medical students, along with a response to natural disasters like hurricanes and floods and terrorist attacks. One of the scenarios being used to train the students is how to respond if a shooter fires at people in a movie theater. It also uses a bomb in the attack.
Isn't that interesting, huh? Michio Kaku, New World Order facilitator.
Yeah, the science establishment is like the medical model. Sterilized white suits with unchangeable answers sent down to us from sacred Mount Know-It-All until they're disproven time and again. But like false flags, once you find out it was manipulated and the actions taken were basically on a completely false premise, it's too late. The deed's been done, the sheeple duped, and the plan is set in motion and the purpose is accomplished.
Yeah, that's true.
And there's one more thing I wanted to read tonight that it's in here, I believe. It was about the... they're expecting a tremendous amount of radiation to hit the West Coast.
I didn't see that.
I'm wondering if this is here. Just interject. Just bear with me.
Maybe you saw it on Natural News. Did you go to that
No,
site?
It wasn't. This is another one that was really interesting. The worst whooping cough outbreak in over 50 years happening among the fully vaccinated.
That's a bit scary.
Yeah, four shots of toxic vaccines do not work against pertussis or whooping cough, then maybe five or six will work, or maybe not. The CDC now reports the highest level of pertussis cases in 50 years. Of course, they are encouraging all children and adults to line up for yet another shot in the dark. And Dr. Ann Schuchter, director of National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases, reports 18,000 nationwide cases so far this year. Twice as many cases as there were in the same time of 2011, and matching the 1959 number reported by this time last year. But what they want you to do is have more, get more vaccines.
Yeah.
Get another vaccine. Even though you have a vaccine, you need another vaccine for the same thing. Anyway, that's really crazy crap. Here we go. Dangerous levels of Fukushima radiation headed for the west coast of the USA, say scientists. We only got 56 seconds left of the show, but in the immediate wake of the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear disaster that occurred in Japan last year, radioactive releases of epic proportions flooded the waters of the Pacific Ocean, where they now flow adrift. And even though more than a year has passed since the time of the first releases, some scientists believe the worst is yet to come as these waterborne radioactive plumes head for the U.S. West Coast. And Russia Today reports that a team of scientists with National Oceanic Atmospheric
Administration's Pacific Marine Environmental Laboratory recently constructed some models designed to assess the impact of Fukushima radiation over the long term.
I just want to mention, we'll continue this The end of the show is right near.
So thanks for being with us, and tune in tomorrow.
Yep. So, but I think this is pretty interesting, only because it's coming our way.
Yeah.
To do this, they simulate ocean currents in the Pacific and evaluate how radiation would disperse and travel. So,
we can't get it, so. Anyway.
Well, just know that it's coming, folks. It's coming your way. I can't, for some reason, I can't.
There's too many screens open, I think.
Probably.
Well, good night, folks. And talk to you tomorrow night. And we can bring that up tomorrow.
We'll play this one tomorrow night for you, folks. We'll get this article up for you.
All right. So let's play the end of the show.
Yeah. So thanks. My computer is virtually...
Yeah, let's just play it on this.
Okay, good night, everyone. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Same time.